It's Wednesday, November 12th, 2008, and you're listening to episode 123 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 55 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name's John.
And my name is Pat.
And my name's Chris.
Full house.
I know, and there might be a little bit of extra noise and mess on this recording because Pat is chewing on gobstoppers. He's got his cup full of icy drink again.
Yeah, Pat, stop being such a gobstopper chewing butthole.
What's wrong with gobstoppers,
and
guys?
Also, Carla's
no blow pops?
Because
where's your blow pop?
I got those too, but those aren't noisy. And then also because Carla's in Port Townsend, Washington right now, the dogs are running free with no one to watch them, so heaven only knows what the sound quality is going to be on this episode.
This could be an impending bonus episode.
It could be.
My dog is going to be caged as well, so he could very well be barking once he gets annoyed at the fact that he's caged.
Alright, well, we're going to push ahead with this and see how we do. So, one and only one announcement, because this is
Beard Wings tonight!
Well, yeah, but this is going to drop after that happens.
Beard Wings 4 days ago.
Yeah.
Oh, they were fantastic!
If you've not already, be sure to go to feartheboot.com/FTB or click the Fear the Boot link off of the homepage at feartheboot.com, because that blog out there, which we've been talking about, we started using. We've got some articles up there. We have some people outside of Fear the Boot that are contributing them. We have one.
Some articles.
We have one up right now by a gentleman who goes by Dragonhelm, which is Trampas.
Yeah, I read that.
From the Dragonlance Canticle. And we've got some other folks that are going to be posting. So check that out just for the entertainment value. And also,
I think he posted that Voyager entry just to antagonize me.
I think it's fine.
I agreed with him because he was right about everything. And
did he say Voyager was terrible?
Yes. Yeah.
He didn't say it was terrible. Yes. He said it was just a half-baked hodgepodge of Star Trek conventions that ultimately went nowhere and did nothing.
To be honest with you, I think that after the old Trek, whatever it's called, classic Star Trek, the original series, Star Trek, the original series, they squeezed all the blood out of that rock.
Well, look, here's the thing. Trampas is not from Fear the Boot, so he operates under the structure of you offer some supporting points and reach a conclusion as opposed to Fear the Boot, where we just offer a conclusion and maybe eventually retcon that with some supporting points to explain how we
and
got
here's
there.
Another thing, DS9 is great. And
I do
it's
like
greater now that I have a copy of the prop of the Rules of Acquisition that I just got for my birthday a couple weeks ago.
Hey, speaking of Star Trek props and Voyager in particular, we got when we picked it up in syndication, one of my old stations, they sent all the marketing materials, you know, like the photos and all that stuff. They sent it in a
trash bag.
A photon torpedo case.
Oh, that's pretty
really?
Cool.
Oh, that's pretty badass.
Oh yeah.
Do
I'm
you
sure
have
it through security? With
I'd just be so afraid that I'd open it and Leonard Nimoy's corpse would fall out. But
I was about to say, do you ever take your little G.I. Joe dolls and put it and pretend it's Spock and launch it out the window like it's his funeral?
I'd turn out the lights, put on Amazing Grace, and cry.
There you go.
Does that count?
Of sure, all the G.I. Joe figures I've known, Duke was the most human.
You're a dork.
I got it. Pat, I'm sorry. Chris, I got to know. Did you get the photon torpedo? Do you have it?
I have it with me, yes. I mean, I don't have it with me right now, but it is here.
All the time, you carry it around.
He's
with
hiding
you.
It at podcasting.
I'm wearing it. No, gosh damn it, dog. No, I haven't.
Have you stowed it in a boat?
Hold on. First, let me answer two things.
Well,
one,
let me hang up.
One, I, wait, one, one, hold on. One, I, no, stop, because this is what I'm talking about.
Can I wrap up the point we were making, and then you can go on?
Chris, you're always interrupting Dan. He never gets to speak.
I know, you never let, especially me or Chad talk.
Yeah.
I've got the photon torpedo case, and it is in, it's like literally like 15 feet away from me. And second thing, my dog is sitting harassing me, and earlier today he bit me in the nuts, which did not feel good at all.
Well, like, you already got kids.
Talk about
like
your nuts,
bad, hard, painful bite.
It was to the point where it's like I felt one of his little canine teeth.
Yeah, Chad. I don't know how often you've been struck in the balls, but there is no good way to do it.
Well, I mean, it's like he bites you in the crotch area, and it just gets the pants. No, you. Is in there, but no, he got you.
Yeah, there was definite oboe yelping going on here.
Wow.
Now you can finish making your point. I've made mine.
Okay, so be sure to check out that blog because we have some entertaining stuff on there, but also I'm going to start using that blog as people send stuff my way.
Oh, okay, so check it out. There's entertainment on there. but then I'm going to start using it. That's the real reason to go. I see.
I am choosing to do this, but many people are using it. But one of the things we are going to start doing with it, I have been doing with it, is as people send stuff our way, information on game releases, and minor announcements we want to make. We'll keep the big ones on here, but minor announcements we want to make. Chris Engler just sent me a really cool website where you can trade collectibles with other people. Be sure to check out just for that stuff as well, because I want to try and get a lot of the trash once again out of the front end of this show. So we'll start doing a lot on the website.
Are you calling Chris's show trash?
Yes. No. Okay. No. Oh, talking about Chris Hussey or Chris Engler?
No, Engler.
Oh, wait, no. He's fine.
Dan calls me trash all the time, especially when he's hitting me in the back.
That's
of the
right.
Head.
Especially when I'm spanking his ass and donkey punching him.
Wow.
All right, John, what's your confession?
I have a confession to make. You know how I said I don't play or start to run forum games because people just lose interest, drift away, and then it dies in ice?
Yeah, pretty much.
I started a forum game, lost interest, drifted away, and let it die in ice.
Nice.
What was the game?
It was Star Wars. I started up on Smelly Cat, and we got about 2 weeks, 6 GM posts from me into it, and I was just like, you know?
Why do people do this?
What's the point here? There's no sparks. There's no magic. We need to see other people.
Yep.
I did that once. And technically, John, when a Star Wars game dies, it technically dies in carbonite.
I suppose so.
But I did that once, though, too. I did
Chris,
a Star Wars game.
Did you just out Star Wars nerd John?
No.
No.
Oh,
no.
We could have a Star Wars nerd off if you want.
No, I need you guys to keep that in your pants because no one wants to see your nerd off.
That'd be kind of fun.
I respect you as a fellow Star Wars nerd, Hussey. We don't need to share.
I totally respect you. You know what you're talking about.
All right. Good. So it lasts. But you were saying, Chris.
No, that was it. I did a Star Wars thing via message boards as well in a Yahoo group. And this is back many years ago, and it did exactly that. It just kind of died. We got into a fight in the hangar bay, and that was about where it ended.
You know, I respect anyone who can successfully do anything via Yahoo group.
We had a Yahoo group for one of our old pen and paper games that was sort of cool, but we talked to each other so much that you didn't need to use it.
Yeah, the Yahoo groups are an abomination. It's just terrible.
It's a topical discussion in a platform that's not topical at all.
Yeah. So anyway, this is boring.
Right.
Let's move on.
All right.
What are we talking about?
So John's here.
Yeah.
So that means we need to talk about the poem.
Oh.
The poem of Tom Bombadil.
Tom Bombadil. My Tom Bombadil poem is too offensive for air repetition.
All right. I just got past. Well, I didn't just. Actually, I'm almost done with the first book. And I was talking to Dawn, and I'm like, Dawn, you love fantasy, and you loved Lord of the Rings, and you're into it and stuff. And just got done with this whole Tom Bombadil chapter, which is maybe 20 pages long or something like that. What the hell was the point of that character? It was like this awful, totally invincible, without regard Marty
Stew. But he doesn't do anything good, and he just sits there with his wife, Barry Goldwater, and drinks his berries and drinks their water. And
he's totally invincible, totally untouchable. The one ring, the most evil ring in the land, who the soul corrupting, crushing power. And the hobbits are so good, but they can only stand against it for so long. Oh, he just puts it on and off. He's like, I'm Tom Bombadil. I put the ring on it. I don't know, there was
no other role in the story at all.
I think the main reason they cut him out of the movies was because Gordon Liddy was not available to play him.
Wikipedia has a quote on, because people were always asking him, it's like, what the hell was the point of Tom Bombadil? I mean, it was just, it's like the flow of the story just grinds to a halt, and then there's this dancing clown, and he's totally just invincible and has all these magical powers, but doesn't do anything. I'm Tom Bombadil. And then they carry on.
Well, wasn't somebody telling us?
And the thing is that Tolkien's response to that is, he has a point in the story. There is a purpose for him in the story. I'm not exactly sure what that purpose was.
It was part of like a bedtime story or
something.
Well,
what he was is a series of poems that he wrote that have nothing to do with Lord of the Rings.
For his kids or whatever.
For his kids. And in the book of poetry, is called The Story of Tom Bombadil. It had two Bombadil poems in it. And he just liked the character so much that he put it into his other book for no reason.
Yeah.
So, John. And I asked Dawn this. I'm telling you, she's like, really, I'm not the person to talk to about this. She's like, you must talk to Johnny G about Tom Bombadil.
I am the most blindly devoted Tolkien apologist you can find.
You speak Orcish, don't you?
A little bit.
Yeah. Conversational
A little bit
Orcish.
Of the Black Tongue of Sauron, but I will not repeat it here.
Yes.
I don't know why Tom Bombadil is in that book. And if I were Peter Jackson making the movies, I would have done the same thing he did. I would have resolved Saruman. I mean, the scourging of the Shire is controversial, and a lot of people say that should have been in, and I agree. Mm-hmm. I think that had a very, very definite purpose.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to that part
yet. As long as those
yet,
movies were in the first
place.
That
would have been almost a whole other movie, though, wouldn't it?
No, no. You could have done it pretty quickly, as long as they were to begin
well,
with.
Well, it was pretty quick.
Seeing as how the last 45 minutes of the last movie was nothing but people saying goodbye to each other,
well,
I would have liked to pair that down and then do another quick battle.
It was real quick. It was Wormtongue stabs Saruman in the back and runs away. I think that would have been gratifying. Yeah. Spoilers!
You know, I haven't gotten to that part yet. I didn't know. Thanks a lot, jerk.
Well, now you
that's
know.
Right. That's okay. Yeah. I'm with you, Chad. I've never read the book.
And you're held and haven't read this stuff yet. No excuse. Moving on.
Back when the movies were coming out, Carla ran a St. Louis line party. Mm-hmm. And the idea was, because these movies had an enormous wait when they opened. The lines were ridiculous. The time you just had to spend standing around.
I gave myself an eye abrasion the day Fellowship of the Ring came out so I could tell my parents I had pink eye, skip school, and go to it. I'm proud of myself for that.
Wow.
My mom called in sick for me when Return of the Jedi came out. She actually totally covered for me.
That's awesome. I was able to skip school. I still hate my parents for not letting me. Actually,
what'd she do when Gone with the Wind came out?
I was going to say I hated them for not letting me go see episode one on midnight, but episode one sucked.
All right. So anyway. What she would do is she met another girl. I don't know. So I don't even remember where. If she was here, I'd have her tell you the story, but she's not. So she met
where this is going.
No, it doesn't anywhere that interesting. I would have liked that too, but
it blew in my mind.
She ends up meeting this other girl and they start up this line party thing where they just walk around and just do trivia and hand out prizes. Just do stupid crap to pass the time because you're staying there for 4 hours, bored out of your mind, waiting for this damn movie to open. And
I wasn't bored out of my mind. I was ready to call the ambulance for my onset of priapism.
Wow. So you had a bleeding eye and a 6-foot-long boner that just wouldn't go away.
Well, the eye was fine. The eye damage was superficial. It used to happen to me all the time when I left my contacts in and played.
Are these two injuries related?
It would be impressive if they were, wouldn't it?
But anyway, so they started a forum that was for the people involved in Slime Party. It actually had a pretty good user base. And one of the things that she put on there at one point was a poll where she lined out the major differences between the books and the movies and asked people to vote on what they thought was the most regrettable thing that was changed from the books to the movie. And she listed in there stuff like the scouring of the Shire.
Sure.
She mentioned
scourging.
I thought it was scouring.
I don't remember if it's scouring.
I believe
or
it's scouring.
It is the scouring of the Shire.
I haven't read that part yet, so you're more experts than I am.
And she listed in there the exclusion of Tom Bombadil and a bunch of stuff. You want to guess what the hands down winning vote was for the number one most regrettable change between the books and the movie?
All three books. This was taken at Return of the King.
I'll give you a hint. I voted for it, so you know my prejudices. So
The fact that the elves show up at Helm's Deep.
That was a landslide winner.
I hate that.
People were really bent out of shape that the elves came in to save the day at Helm's Deep. And I voted for that, but I thought that was just going to be me because I'm a yay home team go human sort of guy. Yeah. I did not expect to see that from the general readership of Lord of the Rings.
I remember that from when those came out. That was a huge hullabaloo. Yeah. People were just like, oh my God, I can't believe that.
And I'm
like,
big theme of the Lord of the Rings novels, which was sort of there in the movies, but way diminished, was that these elf things that helped us out the last time this happened are gone or going.
Yeah, so what's left of mankind has to stand alone.
Well, it's the power shift. You know, the elves are diminishing and going away, and now is the time of man. Yeah. I mean, it's the point of the book, main point. So, but at the same time, I know also a lot of people were raising Cain over the fact that Tom Bombadil was not in there as well.
There was
I read a lot of people like, oh my gosh, he's not in there. He needs to be in there. And I
talked to a girl who I used to know, and she went with her friends, and they were both like huge Lord of the Rings fans. And it got to that point in the movie, and she yelled out in this packed theater, "Where was Tom Bombadil at?" And it's like,
and to quote Eazy-E.
Yep.
So Dan, I was watching the end part of Serenity today as I was folding clothes.
Chris is a woman.
I was gonna say,
and I was reminded. You know what? I fold. I know. I do fold, and I sometimes iron, but I do not darn socks.
Oh my God. I'm just softballs right over the plate here, Chris. That's all I'm saying.
He's putting himself up so we can't.
Let me just tell you that. But anyway, the point is, I was reminded that you were in the process of watching Firefly. How is that going for you?
I actually have not started that yet. I have.
So it's not going very well.
No. Well, no, if I was watching and hating it, it'd be not going very well. It's just not going at all because I've got the first two DVDs from the season sitting out there from Netflix. They're sitting on the kitchen table ready to watch, but I haven't started watching them just yet because I spent a couple days really doing a lot of work for the Fear the Boot stuff, answering emails and trying to get forums up and going, was playing Fable 2. Which isn't Fear the Boot at all, but
no. And the forums have been going for months now.
Or I'm sorry, I didn't say forums. I'm in the blog. Blog stuff up and going, and then right about that time, because I wanted to watch. She's with Carla because she likes that kind of sci-fi.
And
space,
she's out of town.
Yeah, and then she left out of town. So, and then I'm going out of town the following week. So I'm waiting on her to get back home and me to get back home, and then we're going to start watching them. So, ask me again in another week or two, and I will probably have a much more defined answer for you than not
I
yet.
I can do that. Hey, you know, speaking of other things, I have a gaming date, by the way. You know, I haven't really been able to sit down with a group for a number of months, but I happened to run into a lot of the guys from my group that I did sit down with, and we started talking again about we seriously having to go do this. Well, the oldest of that group, obviously, it's him and two of his sons and then some friends, but his wife was there as well. And I was saying, you know, here's some dates where we can go. Which one can we do? And she actually got very involved in the conversation and made sure that he nailed down a date so that he could go game. And it kind of reminded me before of when you guys had talked about, you know, to really run a successful thing, you really have to have that support structure in there. And it was kind of nice because, you know, his wife is not a gamer. But yet she was very enthusiastically supporting him, you know, getting back around that table and sitting down and having some fun. Because either A, he really needs it, or B, it's just something that, you know, she wants to see him have some sort of outside activity outside of whatever it is that he does, you know, in a recreational sense. So I was very happy to see that.
So what are you guys gaming?
We are gaming, actually, this month, like the third Sunday in November. So it's coming up here in a couple weeks. Which is nice, and I'm running it. I'm sitting back, you know, behind the screen and everything like that. We're going to pick up kind of where we left off or so, which was really more like about 8 months ago. But it's going to be, you know, part Resurrection as far as that goes, and
what's
just going to have some fun. It'll be 3.5. So it's going to be D&D, which is fine because that's what everybody was comfortable with. But my hope is once we get through doing this, I really want to try and do something different. I want to try and either do Deadlands. I've been listening to Alice in Chains lately, so that's kind of gotten me in the mood to play Shadowrun. So I might try and do that. Or
how do you get from? Is it like early '90s and Angry equals?
They tried
Shadowrun
to kill the
Alice
rooster
and
my
the rooster
orc.
Was about Vietnam.
Yeah, I know exactly.
I don't know, for some reason the specific album is Dirt. I'll sit there and listen to Dirt, and there's
just a great album. But
is that their only album?
No,
they have
tons of albums. Yeah.
It's a great album, but if for some reason, and I don't know what it is, but that listening to that really just triggers, I don't know, it just makes me think of Shadowrun. It really gets me in the mood to play Shadowrun. I don't know, what it is about it, but it does.
You know what? AC/DC's Razor's Edge album gets me thinking about Final Fantasy I. Because I got that game and that album at the exact same time and played the album on a continual loop while I played that game.
I wouldn't be embarrassed to speak of AC/DC as my gaming memory album. I would, however, be embarrassed to associate Limp Bizkit's significant other with MUDs and Ultima Online, because I do. It was one of my only albums at the time in, you know, 1998, and I just put it on Infinite Replete.
For me, I have a Deep Purple album that for some reason makes me think of Solaris 7.
Which is from Battletech.
Yeah, which is a setting area or setting portion of Battletech. Hmm. I couldn't tell you the name of the album because I don't, it's been so long since I've looked at that album or played that album. I don't remember the name of it.
The Cutthroat Island soundtrack makes me think of Earthdawn.
Do you guys Earthdawn or Earthbound?
No, Earthdawn.
Okay.
The FASA fantasy game.
Do you guys play music while you game? Not video games, like role-playing games.
Typically, no, because I find it too distracting. The only time I've ever had music playing during games that I thought actually worked was we had some of the Star Trek soundtracks playing in the background during a Star Trek game, and that worked for some reason because all orchestral, it's very non-intrusive. And
you also can play it on a loop, and you don't notice it. That's my problem with gaming with music, is that if it's not orchestral or something like that, you know, you could find the perfect song by the perfect band that is perfect for the game and the perfect in the mood that you want to run it in. And you could do one of two things. You could either put it on infinite loop, which kills the mood, or you can, instead of game mastering,
be a DJ.
Play DJ all night. Yeah.
Actually, one of my old DMs, one of my original DMs, did that in his campaign. And this was, again, one of the longstanding campaigns. He had like a, you know, a 5-disc changer. So he would put on the CDs that he would want for the session. Then he'd sit there with the remote behind the screen. And at certain times he'd, you know, in the story, he'd reach over and turn on. He did it pretty well. And it actually, it worked out fairly well. It wasn't distracting because he kept it low enough that it wasn't blaring. And he was able to do it and tell the story without going, okay, hold on a second, guys. Because he, you know, while he'd be doing it, he'd be doing this.
Right.
He was
able kinda to do lean it. Over and do it.
And
on
it worked pretty well. Now, that's the only time that I've ever experienced that. And it was cool. But yeah, I think
idea of it.
Yeah.
You know,
it's just, I think it'd be hard to do.
I personally can't pull it off.
I've done it a couple times, put tracks on during combat rounds. Or if they're in the tavern, I'll throw on some Celtic. Music, you know, a bit more high-spirited Celtic music.
You know,
just kind of
like
try and add some ambience.
This is what's playing in the background.
Well,
click,
see,
and then
exactly. Here's what this though leads into one of the problems I've always had with that, which is in a movie, background music works great because of the fact that if you have a fight scene that might be 2 or 3 minutes long. In D&D, that fight could go on for 30 minutes, hour, maybe longer. If you're talking about something like BattleTech, a lot longer. And that song you started playing when the dragon burst through the floor, you know, that hardcore heavy metal, like everyone's like, yeah, big fight, we're going to kick this thing's ass. And then an hour and a half later, you are still on that same song. Or
you're only in the third round.
You know, another problem I run into, because I've tried this before, is playing music that fits, you know, the perfect song for the perfect mood, for the perfect scene, from the perfect album, perfect band. Everything's going great, and you play, and you got your thing going. And then people start bitching because it's not just you listening to it. It's a bunch of people. Half the people are saying, that's too distracting. Other half are saying, well, I like it. And other people are going like, I really hate this song. Do we have to listen to this song? And it's role-playing has stopped. Bitching has begun. Turn off the radio. Get back to role-playing. That's sort of always the flow chart of what happens to me in music. Again, I guess I'm a really crappy DJ. I can't get a group that can agree on a song. We can't even get a group that agrees on where to go for lunch, much less what kind of music we want to
start
to.
The music
much
game.
Less what kind of game to play.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, music is out the window.
It is
tricky. But like I said, I really like the idea of it. I'm a huge fan of music and all sorts, all different kinds of music. And I do believe that music can set a mood properly done. It's just, man, I really wish I could do it and make it work, but well, I can't seem to.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because I think in this day of the iPod and you know, those kind of devices, I think it is hands down a lot easier to do, because you can make playlists beforehand. You can
make a playlist.
You can make
it.
A
Absolutely.
Bunch of playlists, like, oh, okay, tavern music playlist, boom. You know, fight music playlist, you know, a dramatic music, somber music, this kind of crap. And and you've got the thing right there in your hand. You know, you scroll through it, boom, you play it, there you go. Whereas, like I said before, you know, in the time frame we were doing it, we were working with a 5-disc CD changer, and that was you know, one of the limits of it. You got 5 discs, and now you've got your whole damn music collection on this, you know, little device. So it could be done, but like you said, it takes some practice.
Yeah, I like the idea of the playlist, you know, because that's one of Dan's issues that he was having, was he was saying, you know, you start the fight, and then 20 minutes later, you're still on the same song, or you're on an album. And you've gone from the heavy, nice, cool action music. Now you're into the romance. Yeah. Now you're into the chicky rock ballads. And it's like, okay, you know, it's not quite working here. Exactly. But yeah, you can do the dragon fight playlist.
You got
and then
20
you can do,
songs that are like hardcore fight.
Yeah.
Music.
Or you
doesn't matter that goes to
Chris's, you know, Celtic. This is what is playing in the tavern. And each song, it's just a new set they're doing. And yeah, that is a pretty cool idea.
But then again, I'm also a fan of props, too.
What do you do though when you got like somebody in your group who like the whole group's cool with the music thing and you want to do it? You want to listen to the music.
Then you need the Cisco CD.
Yeah.
No, they need to put on
Barry White. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little belly rubbing music.
Everyone's cool with the music and now they want to do it.
Do it. What happens if you have one person who's not down with it?
Shoot them.
Shut screw up and do it anyway, like you do in everything that's else right, in a gaming crew.
Yeah, that's true.
You're unvoted.
Yeah.
Disembowel them and throw them out into the winter's night.
Yeah, tell them they'll learn to love it.
Mm-hmm. And there's a certain measure of gravity that has to be reached before you can allow the one-man veto.
You tell them it may be a bit uncomfortable at first, but eventually they'll like.
Yeah, exactly.
Your second or third time, it feels a lot better. Uh-huh. All right. Characters, player characters specifically, as an antagonist. All right.
I'm glad I'm here.
Mm. Characters as an antagonist.
I haven't run a protagonist player character in the last 5 years.
This is a concept.
Are you talking about it like a competitive game?
No, because with a competitive game, you're all antagonistic to each other. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about
about everyone gets along and is talking, but one guy is the Jafar.
Jafar. Oh, from Lion King.
No, Aladdin.
Nice. No, oh, from Aladdin. Aladdin.
Oh.
Some I was thinking evil element Stargate. Of an otherwise contiguous group. Yeah. Okay, no, I was completely lost.
Right. But yeah, it's something like that. You have a group of four characters, and one of them is operating against the other three. And this could be on the sly. It could be nobody knows. There's just note passing between the player and the GM. It could be out in the open. This is one of those things.
Could it be that each individual's player character with the others is more nuanced than simply on your side or not on your side?
Well, I'm painting with a broad brush here, okay, just for the sake of, because I mean, if I sit out here and try to do some kind of relationship chart to show how this all comes together,
well, then, yeah, we're talking very, very right, bird's eye view.
Yes, I'm talking
inevitably something that is changed by its specifics.
Probably so, and we can talk about some of those specifics and how they would change it. And this is one of those ideas that I am 99% against, and the reason I would not say 100% against is because
you don't like interparty conflict.
Right, and I can talk about some of the specifics.
Because players who go in with their villains wanting to lose with them are rare.
Yes. Typically, they go in wanting to win.
That's why I get away with it, because I always die.
That right, largely, in my mind, takes the fun out of the game, because it just becomes people being ignorant to each other for something that no longer, in my mind, seems to serve a story purpose. I guess it could. But I leave open that 1% because it might work. But one of the things that really made me dislike this idea was we played a Transformers game, and everyone in the party thought they were on one side. They were independents, but they thought they were all working together. And Tex was playing, and his character had gone turncoat and was working for the Decepticons, and he was passing notes back and forth with the GM about all the things he was doing to screw us. We had no idea this was going on. Until we get to the very end, to the whatever it was, the MacGuffin at the end of the plot, mm-hmm, where we are supposed to come in and do something, and he takes it and flies away and is never seen again. And that's the end of the campaign.
That is a GMing failure on behalf of the guy who was running it.
Well, but in fairness to the GM.
Who was you?
No, it was not me.
Oh, okay.
But I would have never allowed this in the first place. You know right, that. No, in fairness to the GM, he was allowing, I mean, he was following precepts I would otherwise espouse. Namely, he was letting, in this case, my brother, get the logical outcome of the things he was doing. That he had chosen a character of this background, which started him in adversity at the party. This is where, as a GM, I would have killed it. I've never allowed it to even start. But once you let it go, he's declaring his actions. He's doing logical things. He was rolling his dice and making the rolls, and he pulled it off.
Chad, whenever one of my characters started to win, continued to win, should have been winning because he was doing the right things, did you ever actually let him win?
Oh, hell no. He's the bad guy. No.
Yeah. Well, I say, yeah. I think that is one of the ways in which you could make it work.
I'm the game master.
There are two things I think you got to do to make this work. One is you got to have people that are not going to take game issues outside of the game. And I'll be honest, for me, that's kind of hard. When people do really ignorant stuff to me at the gaming table, that kind of, you know, gets under my skin.
That's why it's easier to have a whole lot of people win and one guy lose.
Well, yeah, that was going to be my second thing.
What do you mean, like, way, ignorant things at the table? Do you mean, like, personally ignorant things? Or my character says something ignorant about your character?
I don't know. I don't mean that. I'm not so psycho I can't separate fiction from reality. Yeah. I mean more like,
if you someone leave it totally at the table, sits down and dicks you over at the gaming table out of nowhere,
yeah,
it feels kind of bitter.
Yeah,
play diplomacy sometime and get Galicia run over on your second turn by a Russia who is your buddy. Doesn't feel
John,
good.
We'll be playing diplomacy soon. You need to join us.
You guys haven't started yet?
We have not started yet.
I thought all the slots were full.
I will join you guys, even though I lose friends when I play Diplo real fast.
I'm not playing it, so you don't worry about me.
Okay.
But we'll still be buddies. I'll still be your friend.
I don't mean when
somebody in character says something ignorant about my character. I don't mean that psycho. But I mean more like all throughout the game, for no really discernible reason, somebody else kills my character. Or somebody else steals all my possessions.
Yeah,
or...
I was the thief who stole the wizard's spellbook and then extorted money out of him to get it back.
Yeah.
way back in the day. We're talking, I did this when I was like 11.
Right, and that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. But the second thing I think you've got to do...
And that's just stupid.
...to make this work is you have to accept that the character who is the betrayer is not the same as every other character at the table. And someone, I think, John, you were kind of hitting on this, that you have to treat this person almost like an NPC played by a player more than a PC, because all the kinds of things I would say you should normally extend to a player character, reasonable chance of life, reasonable chance of success, fair and logical outcome to all their actions. If you allow one guy to quote unquote defeat all five other people at the table, it kind of, once again,
is that the democracy of good, though?
Well,
although I don't disagree with it, because it leaves a bad taste in your mouth.
It's the democracy of entertainment, because the point here is to have fun. And if you're going to allow one guy doing something he really does not need to do to enjoy the game, to do something that will ruin the enjoyment of everyone else at the table.
Let's go back to the Transformers thing, though. You know, it's like he grabs MacGuffin and he flies off, and everyone's like, huh? What just happened? That's a real letdown for an end of a campaign.
That's a horrible way to say cut.
It's
a great way to end one sitting.
Yeah, that's a great cliffhanger. And you could do a lot with that. You could do a sort of semi-competitive game where the next couple of... Again, I've talked about this where you can't... It's really hard to have an ongoing competitive campaign. But for the next couple of games, it could be everybody versus the one guy. Might be fun. And then eventually, they defeat him and get the MacGuffin, or the MacGuffin's destroyed, or any of the other 10,000 trope endings you can do. And then that guy makes a regular character that goes forward.
Let's look up the etymology of that. What is the etymology of MacGuffin? Where does that word come from?
GunTVTropes.com?
I looked it up. I can't. Unfortunately, I can't tell you what it is, but I remember looking at it because it's...
have no idea.
No, it's Hitchcock.
Yeah,
It's from Alfred Hitchcock. One of the he used a term in one of his movies, and it was the MacGuffin. I believe that's where it comes from.
Hearing it mentioned repeatedly in my Hitchcock class.
I'll sweep in with the answer.
I was thinking about gaming instead of listening.
I'm fairly sure that it comes from Hitchcock, and he'll tell us eventually. I just want to say that on this subject, I think we can tie this in a little bit to the last episode, in the fact of in the couple times that I've actually done this type of character that was working against the group, it was a short-lived character by definition, and it was planned with the game master, and it was like a one session event, and I enjoyed it because, you know, I was sort of working against the party, but then the fun thing is that at the end of the night, it is revealed that I'm the bad guy, and then I got into a fight with happened to be in the Deadlands setting, so we get in a fight, and they were coming after me, and I think that my character actually got away because. You know, so he didn't get killed, but he was revealed as working against him. And it was fun. I mean, it's like, oh, they didn't know it was coming. They didn't see it until
what happened next game? Was that the end of the campaign? Did you play a different character?
It wasn't a campaign ender. And it was, like I said, for me, it was one of the times where I was back in Springfield.
So you were really there. So.
It was a one shot kind of a thing. So I think if you do this kind of a character, you can do it like as a one shot type.
Right.
To say if you're just in town for the week or, you know, for one session or something like that, it's more doable. I agree with you. I would be almost 100% against it. If you're going into a brand new campaign that's going to be longer running and you're going to be playing the character that's basically going to be trying to screw the party.
Yeah, I
don't think that's fun. But, you know, if it's a one shot thing and you've got a well-defined plan with the GM saying, this is what I want to accomplish here. I don't want you to kill the party per se, but, you know, I want it to sort of. Maybe or maybe not come out at the end of the night that this is what's going on, and it's something to further the plot along for them. It can be a lot of fun,
and there are circumstances in which it's more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what if the one guy out didn't so much betray everyone else as they all betrayed him? Chad, you remember when my BattleTech lieutenant got usurped?
Yeah,
he didn't take that well.
No, he didn't.
But you let me tear crap up because I was kind of justified in doing that.
Yeah, yeah. It was like the party overruled you out of character, and then in character they overruled you, and was mutiny.
Yeah.
But
they mutinized and I shot them.
Yeah. And then, of course, there were more of them than him.
Well,
and
I died eventually, but I took down a whole lot of...
This sounds more like the issue in the either the group template or...
It wasn't an issue.
Party conflict resolution.
It wasn't a problem.
It was great.
It was fantastic.
How many games did the campaign go after that?
Several.
Several.
It went this on and on. John made a new character.
Yeah. Oh, you made a new... Okay, I was going to say, somebody's got to die here, so...
Oh, he died all right.
Yeah, oh, in a hail of gunfire. Yeah. It was,
nice.
I think, wetting his pants along the way. It was...
Yeah, John was playing cowards who just broke. Yeah, got pushed too far.
Yeah, John was playing the lieutenant who basically couldn't do his job.
Yeah.
And who was
just
getting,
got out of the academy, didn't know anything.
So he's
about
like the stereotypical butter bars.
Yeah.
Or
he's, yeah, he's and, the omnipresent aliens sci-fi lieutenant. The only thing lieutenants do in any of these things in Starship Troopers is get shot so the sergeant can take over and become himself.
No, it was semi-planned. It wasn't fully planned. And it's just kind of like, I say that because we did not sit down and say, John says, I am going down like this. And the group was like, okay, that's a fantastic idea. From inception, you could see logically that that's where it was going, and then it logically hit that point in the game, and there was pants wetting and gunfire, and then the plot carried on from that point. It was great.
I became a bondsman.
Yeah.
That's not really an antagonistic thing, though. I mean, that was, you know, you weren't actively going against the characters. Well, you were just playing your character as being someone who didn't necessarily know
that was
his job.
Pretty damn antagonistic.
The end you were
well, let
going,
me put it to you this way. John wasn't the big bad. If you if you're still on TV Tropes looking up MacGuffin, you know, John wasn't the big bad of the story.
I mean,
but
my dude went to the major or whatever. The major said, "Do what you have to do to get control of your lance again." And he just went to the armory, got a rifle, and started killing.
Yeah, and ended up dead. Yeah,
yeah. So it's antagonistic. It's I don't think it's you really can cut cool. it
well,
anywhere
yeah,
other
that,
than that.
Certainly shooting at your fellow party members, that's a little antagonistic, but I mean...
Yeah, but I wasn't cast as the bad guy, if that's what you're getting at.
This is not one where
that is what I'm getting at. And that's a bit... And see, for me, that's a bit more manageable because that's a character path that you're dealing with. You're not actively setting out. And I'm not... I'm with, you know, Dan and Pat on this. I wouldn't want to do this either, primarily because... You're essentially giving up power as a game master. You're ceding some of that power to this one person who's trying to do things, really in a certain sense against you.
Oh, yes.
And what you,
but Chad,
and what you have,
you loved doing that.
What's wrong with that? I'm still not hearing a problem here, Chris.
The problem is you go from being a game master to just becoming, you know, some sort of neutral arbiter, and that's not cool. Mm, that's
what are you talking about? I'm telling
there was
a story.
Big world,
well, but that's what you're not telling a story anymore.
And
the players are telling a story.
And isn't that the whole damn point?
Isn't that the point?
Well, here's the thing. I'm not saying I object to that, but if the intention of your game is that the game master has a story of which the players are going to be a major part, perhaps even a story changing part, or ideally a story changing part, and you want to take the completely, or you get to a point where you have completely washed your hands of the game. That
you
all
said
you're doing
about washing the hands of the game.
Chad didn't wash his hands of the game. The whole
that's what you guys are saying.
Well, but Chris, no, that's what you were saying. Chris was saying you become a new neutral arbiter, and they're telling the story.
What's
the problem with that?
No, that's what he said after I said that.
Right, and so that's what the problem with that is.
No.
That is my point, though, is that you do become that neutral arbiter.
In an extreme situation that, yes, you could become a neutral arbiter, but I think it depends on what you're doing. I just don't think that you're always just going to be this, you know, neutral guy saying, okay, you guys do this and you do that. You still have control of the game. Yeah. And I think that depending on the GM, it all depends on the
personality.
Who do
you think was playing the major that told them to go get the guns?
Well, right, maybe they're going to like that because, hey, it gives them something. It changes things up for the GM. It's like they've got to now, instead of just rattling off, this is the story that I've created.
Exactly.
This is what it's going to be. They're
games
like, holy
don't
crap,
exist
this
down.
Is something new. Yeah. Now
I mean,
I've got to react to this.
Spits back up at you, and the more the better, in my opinion.
Because I know of a lot of GMs that you know, they sit around, they sit behind the screen long enough, they get bored with it, and like, I'm sick of running a game. I want to get back out there and play. And that could give them a chance. Even still, as a GM, I've got this player that's giving me this new stuff I've got to react to. It's almost like I'm playing.
Yeah, exactly. So, to me, a GM is not somebody who drops breadcrumbs of a plot that the players pick up and consume and then carry on to the next one and pick up and consume and carry on to the next one. It's this living thing where, you know, it's like you have your story, you have your plot, and it's fluid. That doesn't mean that it changes a whole lot where you go from playing a Western to a sci-fi game, but to where, you know, things change. It's like, yeah, the there's the big bad, and he's in the office downtown, and he's controlling the corp. And you got this whole thing where the players are trying to work around him and expose him. And then, you know, say they're playing press guys. And then one of the players says, screw it. He's evil. We can't take him down. I've got a gun. We have press passes. We could walk into the building. Let's cap him in the head and deal with the consequences. That breaks your game. But, God, it breaks it in such a cool way. Yeah. Let's run with it.
But now you're talking two different things, though, because... Yeah, it sure it could break your game, but the difference is that you've got all the players in agreement that they're doing what they're doing. You don't have the players playing against each other, and you arbitrating what they're doing. In your example right there, the players are deciding to essentially break what the plot has been laid out by the game master, and that's fine. If they want to go ahead and do it, do it. And it's up to the good game master to deal with that situation.
Why is it not up to game master to deal with it if it's one of the fellow reporters that they want to shoot?
Well, I think.
But if you've got one guy who is actively trying to screw over the other players, and he's telling you some things that he wants to do, and the players are telling you other things that they want to do, how as the game master are you even really moving the story
so
along? You're
so
only throwing
all the
things
players
out here to
have
maybe
to agree all the time for the story.
Well,
no,
that's not. I mean, and that's not.
I would say
at
a
all.
Couple things. First off, we've all this one point we can all certainly agree on. I think it's actually kind of cool we don't agree on this because I think of some of the recent episodes we've too much agreed. But my biggest concern, and let me address this before I get to the debate you guys are having right this moment, is the purpose of a game is for a group of people to work together to have fun, and if one guy is being a dick to everyone else in a way that is damaging their fun.
How do you define it being a dick, and how do you define damaging fun?
I don't.
And is it the guy or the character being a dick?
Either one, because I mean, who's controlling the character? But I think once again, I think we can put this in.
I think it's only a problem if the guy's being a dick.
I think we can put this within
if the guy's
reason.
Being a dick, that's a different issue. But if he's a good guy, but he's playing a dick character, that's a completely different thing.
Yeah, it'd be just as stupid to scream at actors who played villains in TV for being evil.
You know, and that's actually kind of funny because. Was it that there was a show? I think it was called ER. There was the one of the villains in ER. Like he played this villain. He was like this really dickhead character. People hated him, and he would walk down the street, and people would drive by in their car, lean out the window. I hate you, you son of a bitch! And he's like, I'm an actor. It's a role.
Thanks,
well,
I'm
right, okay,
to.
But you guys are running off on a stream. I didn't say so. All right, getting back to my point.
But you did say it's a problem if the character only is being a dick.
And he's ruining the fun of other people at the table.
I just want to make sure we have our
nomenclature. That was my point, that if someone at the table is being a dick, whether in character or out of character, in such a way that is ruining the fun of everyone else at the table, it has gone too far.
Well, see, I agree with that too. And I also agree with if you have one person who isn't being a dick and ruining the fun of the other people at the table, because I've had that too.
Precisely. Prissy Pants, who's going to get offended and destroyed by everything.
But,
screw him.
Yeah. To the current thing, here's what I would say. Part of the entertainment for me as a GM is, and really it's two big things that go to GMing. One is the narrative. I enjoy writing and telling stories. That does not mean dictating on railroads. Okay. I want people to surprise me. That's point two. The second thing I like doing is put people in a situation and letting them surprise me with how they're going to resolve it. So in this regard, I agree with Chris in that when I sit down at the table, I'm not going to hold you any railroads. I'm not going to force you guys to hold hands and always get along. But if you guys are busy fighting each other, two things are going to happen. One, you're probably going to get wiped out because in the plots I run, they tend to be very underdog. You have enough problems in the outside world. If you're killing each other, it's probably over anyway. But secondly, because if all I'm doing is arbitrating because Chad's trying to kill John, is trying to kill Pat, is trying to kill Chad, and I'm just
a great campaign,
and I'm just awesome. Taking notes from you guys under the table and rolling dice to see whether
we co-ran it,
you know, whatever, then at no point does that narrative ever get told. And as soon as one of you is dead or two of you are dead, the campaign's effectively over anyway. And whatever I prepared, that story I wanted you guys to
see, because I think
you never occur.
Make a new character.
Just like in my example with John here. John got blown away. He tried to kill the party. Party blew him away. Party had fun. Players had fun. Game master had fun. Campaign carried on. Nothing was killed. It's a game mastering style.
Oh, absolutely. Because, and I will once again, I would say that's perfectly good because you have succeeded at what you needed to do in the first place, which is have fun as a group.
Totally would not run a game like that for all groups.
Right.
It was that group, that disposition worked great.
Right. Absolutely. Let's put aside the adversarial character. And let's start.
Chris, you better never come down to St. Louis.
Let's talk about.
I'm taking you down. Me and you behind the church after school, man. I'm going to kick your ass.
Chris Hussey, don't you tell me what my suicidal adversary character will do.
Let's talk about the adversarial situation. What is the strangest thing you have ever seen ruin a game? Not a person.
That just
ruin a game. There's of course the inevitable ones like the D4 injury.
A game session or a game?
Either one.
My very first role-playing game that I had played. My first role-playing game experience was actually in preschool, blah, blah, blah. Let me restart this.
Were you molested?
I was going to say, wait a minute.
My very first role-playing game experience was in kindergarten, kindercare. There were some kids, and it was nap time, and they were like next to you. Uh-huh. We're talking like 5-year-olds and 9-year-olds.
I still don't like where the story's going.
So, and they had pens and paper, and socks. They had dice, and they were kind of whispering back and forth to each other. And I kind of crawled over there. I'm like, "What are you guys doing?" And we're playing a game. Go away.
Yeah.
And I was like really curious. What the hell is that? I really want to play this game because they won't let me play. I mean, I didn't even know what it is. They just wouldn't let me play. That was what was getting me about it. Years later, here I am doing a podcast on role-playing games. It all stems from that, I'm sure.
And I bet they don't even play role-playing games. Yeah. I bet they have jobs and families.
I bet they kiss girls. Those losers. So, anyway, my next role-playing game experience was years later in junior high. Dan and Dan's brother, and we were making Star Trek characters, but I didn't actually play. I played with my family, my uncles and aunts and their friends, and we played D&D. And it was that Ravenloft module, which was really awful. Ugh. And my show-stopping character death was I get separated from the party. Great move for that, GM. And I find a deck of cards.
Oh,
and the deck of never played a game in my life. Oh, had no clue, God. Right?
If you're tired of your campaign and want to end it, there's one item in the Dungeon Master's Guide that will do it.
Anything.
It was a deck of many
things. I wonder what the ratio of normal decks of cards to decks of many things has been in D&D throughout the entirety of its history. Probably 5-1.
We used to have a guy who did that all the time.
If you read the fluff on it, the fluff is this is what the game master is supposed to say. It's like you pick up the cards and you hear a disembodied voice that asks you how many, or at least that's what my game master did. And so I'm looking at no clue about this, what it is. And all the other people are like, oh my God. And he's like, you're not there. They're like, oh, and they're trying to tell me and signal me. And I'm like, not getting it.
So and what do you say? 15.
No, I say, all of them.
I was just thinking that. I'm like, yeah, that'd be awesome. All of them.
I mean, it's either all or none, right? I mean, why else would it?
You know, that actually might get you right back where you started.
It's only there for a purpose.
There are some insta-gibs in there that you can't even.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so the first card I draw, and he rolls it, right? And it's not like he just...
I said the original one was actually supposed to be played, if I'm not mistaken, with a Pinochle deck. I think changed it later for a Pinochle deck.
Well, there was a
chart.
Yeah, actually, when I played it, it was actually they had cards.
Yeah, it was a Pinochle deck. They changed it later to be a...
Well, okay, we didn't have a Pinochle deck, but I saw the chart and he rolled on the chart. First card I draw was death.
Yep.
And what happens is instantly a minor death spirit or something.
And if anyone helps you, they get their own show.
It comes up. Yeah, if anybody helps you. But I was separated, springs forth to life. He gets the first hit automatically. He automatically hits with the first hit. These are rules. These aren't rolls. He does, if you roll his damage out, the minimum amount of damage he can roll, if you just roll 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, was the exact number of hit points I had to kill me dead.
Oh, wow.
Not even unconscious. Nice. And it was just like, dead. And I'm like, so that's role-playing, huh?
All right, it's the strangest game killer I have. There is a law of physics. Food is attracted to a palladium book.
Yes.
If you are hungry and you cannot afford food, you know, food stamps aren't cashing out or whatever.
Then you sure as hell can't afford a palladium book.
I don't know. Give it a year.
But all you have to do is take your palladium book, drive past a McDonald's and hold it out the window, and a meal will come to you. This law first exerted itself when we were playing Robotech, and Chad dropped a pizza. Not a slice of pizza. A pizza. whole damn thing straight face down on an open Robotech book. I still have in one of them, there are two pages that are just flat tomato sauce red from where this thing went straight down. Now, we had forgotten about this law. And we were playing, I can't remember, I want to say it was a Star Trek, Star Wars game, one of the two. But we were playing this over at a friend of ours' house. And we had a big tin, like one of those, the tin with the cardboard, like a little tube, mm-hmm. of Hungry Jack biscuits that we were going to eat. That were sitting on a shelf next to a Riff's book. You can see where this is headed.
Yeah.
So in the middle of the game, we had what we have termed to this day the Great Biscuit Rebellion. There was this explosion. I mean, just this jaw-dropping, heart-stopping boom. And we're like, just freeze. It's like, what the hell? I mean, it was so unbelievably loud.
Who got shot?
Yeah, exactly. We're all like, because it's been an apartment on ground level, so we're all checking ourselves for bloodstains. And turn around and look roughly where the noise came from, and there's this blasted, spent shell of a biscuit tube, and there are biscuits just blown with cannon's force all over these Riff's books.
Nice.
It was the Glitter Boy shooting its shell.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, thank you guys for tuning in. Just let you know, over the next, probably next week, the show's maybe a little bit different because I'm going to be in Seattle, and I'm going to try and record some stuff while I'm up there with Tex, maybe a couple of listeners up there, and also with Ed Healy from Atomic Ray. I have no idea what's going to come out of that. So you will see something on this feed next week, but I have no idea what it's going to be.
Me and Chad and Pat are going to stage a coup, and we're going to record some stuff here as well.
I don't know, man. I might have the day off. I might just take a nap.
Maybe I'll just record some stuff here
just
at home.
And just call up Chad and leave him an hour worth of message on his answering machine.
I could do that,
too. Do a Battletech romance with him. So.
Wait. You know what? I meant to tell you this, because we were cleaning up the basement. This was actually happened about a month ago.
We should have cleaned up, you know, right after, but continue.
Trust me, I do. Anyway, but so, so we're sitting there. I'm going through a storage bin. That had a bunch of old mementos, and I found one of those letters, and I had forgotten this particular element that I did not mention the first time.
What is the ransom on this?
No. Wait, just listen. This you'll love.
Okay.
This. Okay. So I gotta do a little backstory here. when Fossa, of course, BattleTech had just come out, they had the BattleTech fan club. You could pay $5 or $15, and what you would get back from Fossa was, and you first of all, you'd pick your house affiliation.
Right. I remember this.
So you'd get Comstar from them in this
packet.
Yeah,
I think we're the only chapter of their little club that was Comstar.
But what you would get from them, you would get a folder that had the house symbol on there. Inside, you'd get a letter with the house stationery. Right. You'd get like some radiation tabs or some goofy thing like that, and like a little tag with a little house symbol on there. So you'd get all this stuff with them. So what I did was I took that house stationery, basically, covered up the cover of the letter part that was on there, photocopied it, so I basically had my own house Steiner paper. All right, had a little Lyran Commonwealth thing on the top, and that was what I wrote her letters to her on, was this Lyran Commonwealth thing to add that
right,
extra element of authenticity.
I'm just telling you right now, this is the start of a charity auction. You are going to name a charity and a dollar amount, and if Fear the Boot fans can get it, you are going to give me this letter.
I'll have to look and see. I got to see if I can find it and make sure there's nothing dirty in
there. There's something dirty. You can redact parts of it if you want, but we are going to put a bounty on this. Maybe we'll do like USO donation. I'm thinking about doing something for the troops this Christmas anyway, so maybe we'll sell like a USO donation like limit on this. If our fans get a certain amount of money, I'm going to take this letter from him and read it on the air.
My rules.
Well, you know what? Honestly, if it can get there, I will... I'll scan it and we'll upload it somewhere in the forum.
That is awesome. That's awesome. That is absolutely awesome. We're still going to have a bonus episode where one of us reads this.
I thought I had the only fake letterhead in the universe, because my rules of acquisition are printed on Ferengi Empire paper with like the watermark of the seal and stuff. But Lyran Commonwealth is pretty sweet too.
So, all right. Anyway, for the rest of you guys who hopefully keep your embarrassing stories secret, thank you all for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya
later.
Later days.
Bye.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2008, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.